The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this September 9th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. Across from me is Christian Griffin. We hope you're doing well on a gorgeous day in the Auburn Opelika area, and tons to get to on the show today as we really put a bow on Auburn versus Ball State. We also kind of recap fully week two of the college football season and a whole lot more. Christian, happy Tuesday, sir. How are you, man?
Doing well. Yeah, excited to dive into a little bit more of the Auburn-Ball State win. Again, the good and the bad, some things that we would like to see this Auburn team to continue to improve on. Also dive into a little bit as we turn the page to South Alabama here this weekend. We're talking about the opening lines. Man, how a bunch of people have circled this as possibly that trap game for the Auburn Tigers. All of that before 2:30, and 2:30 on Tuesday afternoons mean that we get to continue our high school coverage. So I get to sit down with Lee Scott Academy's head football coach, Buster Daniel, before we dive into all of our high school recap from last week and a dive into this week as well.
Yep, there's a lot to get to. We want to hear from you. Phone lines are open, 334-321-1390. If you want to call in, give us your thoughts on what you think about Auburn versus Ball State. Kind of, again, wrapping up those conversations and beginning to look ahead to this weekend where Auburn will host South Alabama for the first time. We'll play South Alabama for the first time ever, which is kind of wild to me. But just again, if you want to give us your thoughts, we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. You can also shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. And we talked a lot yesterday about Auburn beating Ball State, right, by the score of a lot to a little. And why it looked good, while we were impressed with it, and the fact that Auburn won in a different way. But what are your feelings, Christian, now that we've had a couple of days to fully break this all down, and just kind of your final takeaway of Auburn versus Ball State, 42-3 final score. Tigers hold Ball State to almost no yards, it seemed like, altogether. Ball State's final yardage total was 68 offensively. Auburn puts up nearly 500. I mean, just your final thoughts on what we saw on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, on the positive side of things, how nice is it that, again, the big thing we talked about yesterday was the fact that we don't have to sit here and overanalyze this game. We don't have to sit there and look at every single drop back that Jackson Arnold had, and man, he held the ball too long here, and he can't do that against the good teams, or man, this running back couldn't stay on their feet, man, you can't look at this offensive line, how creating holes, things like that. And so it's so nice that you already have that big win against Baylor under your belt to where you don't have to sit here and overanalyze everything. But we'll dive into a little bit later in the show on the standpoint of the defensive side of what we saw from DJ Durkin, what we've heard from practice today. He was not very pleased with the defense today, and hearing that, I absolutely love it. But the offensive line, I feel like if there's one thing that you want to go back, look at, and continue to improve on, you would say that it's that camaraderie, that unit as a whole. Jackson Arnold was sacked 4 times. That being said, going back and looking at this, Arnold was definitely told to stay in the pockets this game. What was in the press press conference, they said they called one, maybe two quarterback design runs, and then Freeze even a question or two later said, you know what, that design run might have been for Deuce. It might not have even been for Jackson Arnold. Going back and watching some of this game, there were definitely holes in the defensive line that Arnold, you saw him take advantage of that against Baylor in week one. You didn't see him do as much of that, and I think that was more so by design, staying in the pocket for a little bit longer, not having to use his legs. Again, had 9 rushes for 5 yards, one of those being a quarterback kneel before halftime, and then a couple sacks in there as well. But again, I'm not going to overanalyze anything on the offensive side of the football, especially when we're considering looking at all of these stats and saying that Auburn, with a bunch of these metrics, dominated this game so much more than what the score may show.
Yeah, I wish this is the weekend now with South Alabama coming to town, who isn't a pushover. We'll talk about that in a moment, but I do wish that this was a game this weekend against a P4 opponent. This is the one where either this one or Mercer right at the end of the year, right? And it's, I've talked about it, the fact that I want one of those games to go away off the schedule, and there's a chance that it probably will now that the fact that the SEC is going to 9 conference games. But for this Auburn team's sake, I wish they were playing a P4 opponent this weekend just to see what they do, right? Just to see what the positive carryover would look like offensively and defensively, because I'm with you. I mean, I think the defense speaks for itself with statistics and things like that. I mean, again, according to the stats, this was one of the most dominant victories that Auburn has ever had in the history of its program statistically. I mean, it's just, it is what it is. Offensively, yes, the offensive line wasn't great. Running the ball looked good, and we do have updates on the running back room and what that's going to look like. But overall, what more could you have asked for other than if Auburn had put up 70 points instead of 42? But you did what you were supposed to do, relatively stayed healthy. I know Darrell's an issue, but you relatively stay healthy. You get a clean, easy win, a stress-free win, and you could see that with Arnold and Freeze and all the guys on this team that they enjoyed what they were able to do on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, what we saw from Coach Freeze and Jackson Arnold in the press conference following the game looked like two guys that truly went out and enjoyed Saturday night in Jordan-Hare, right? I mean, the very first question, they had a video of it, the question that you asked about Xavier Atkins, and a coach that's stressing about a game wouldn't go out there and say, yeah, he's in there dancing, doing TikTok dances right now. I was able to get in a couple of them, so hopefully he's putting out some pretty good content right now. A coach that had a very stressful game would not lead with something like that. And so being able to see the smiles all around from the players, the coaches, and obviously the fan base as well, it's definitely a very good sign moving forward. I do kind of agree with you. Rather than having those back-to-back G5 games, that's why I think that South Alabama game is kind of circled in there as a trap game, possibly one that Pitt fans could be a little bit worried about, because yeah, you're just coming off a very big win over Ball State. You have Oklahoma looming in the shadows, but you still have one more opponent at home. It's that earlier slate. You hope that Auburn is able to still go full pedal with that game.
But even though Auburn won and looked good doing it, what needs to get better moving forward? What did Auburn get away with against Ball State, or what could they get away with against South Alabama that when they go on the road to Oklahoma in less than 2 weeks, they won't. They won't be able to do this or that against Oklahoma or Texas A&M or Georgia, because after next week, it ramps up in SEC play. What are those things in your mind? And this is open to people too, 334-321-1390. What are those things that Auburn needs to get better on, or you want to see Auburn get better on over the next several weeks?
The first one, again, is the conversation that we had a little bit yesterday on the offensive line units and getting beat, especially on the speed, the edge rushers. Again, that could have been just Ball State throwing a bunch of different fronts, sending a bunch of different guys, or, again, we don't know exactly what the case was, but Arnold being sacked 4 times you feel like is a little bit alarming. That being said, again, I feel like he was told to stay in the pocket a little bit more than he had the total freedom like he did against Baker, again, in Waco against Baylor, which we all saw his ability to take off and run once option 1 and option 2 weren't necessarily there. I'd still love to see the defense get off the field on third and long. There were a couple times when it was either a long third down completion that got a first down, or it was third and 17, and they were still able to pick up 14 and make it to where it's, okay, you're at the 45-yard line, now it's decision time, rather than an incomplete pass, and you're definitely going to punt, right? Or we saw a couple of them, although many people don't necessarily agree, the penalties on third down. You had a couple of face masks on third down that gave Ball State a fresh set of downs. Again, I don't think we all agree with all of those calls, but when you go and look at third down statistics, I feel like the box score looks a whole lot better at times than what we saw on the field truly.
Yeah, and that was so much of our complaints from last year, right? It was like, okay, Auburn only gave up 24 points, but there were a couple of crucial drives in there where you didn't get off the field. Yeah. And then offensively, there were boneheaded mistakes and turnovers and bad play calls and things like that. And look, we just haven't seen those in the first 2 weeks, and you probably won't see them this weekend with Auburn being, what, a 24.5-point favorite against South Alabama?
It's like, jumped a point, too. So
it's 25.5 now? I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, should Auburn win this weekend? Yeah, they should win, and they should win by a lot. It's homecoming. There's a lot of other things going on. Like, Auburn should win this weekend, and unfortunately, for what we do and even for the fans, it should be one of those weekends where Auburn cruises to another victory.
I'd love to see, too, and this is a credit to Hugh Freeze and the offense that we haven't seen it yet, because these two defenses have not allowed Auburn fans to see it yet, but it's anything 15, 20 yards down the field, right? You have not seen that. You didn't see it against Baylor because they ran that too high shell with the two safeties, the cornerbacks dropping back to where it was cover two, cover three, cover four, just about every single play, where you were able to take your medicine and you got 6 yards a carry and march down the field. Against Ball State, it was almost that to the extreme. You obviously saw the running game have so much success with Jeremiah Cobb going for 121 yards and 2 touchdowns. They ran the ball for 224 yards. Yet, you were able to see, because these cornerbacks and DBs were playing so far off of the receivers, the 8-yard hitch routes were right there. The tight ends were able to leak over the middle of the field for a couple catches. You saw the screens that were all there because these guys were not allowing Auburn to go over the top. There's going to be a time, and we talked about it yesterday, put ourselves in the shoes of Brent Venables. Why would you not send 6 or 7 every single time? Tell your corners, all right, you're on Revis Island. You're playing man-to-man, face-mask to face-mask, and we're going to make Jackson Arnold complete 15-yard passes consistently over your head. They're going to go win 50-50 balls and have to run crisp, exact routes, and he's going to have to put the ball on the money. And if he does, you'll tip your cap and you'll let him get off the dirt himself after every single shotgun snap. You don't necessarily expect that as much with Alabama, with South Alabama, just because of, again, the talent level. You would hope that's the case, but there's going to be a time when you really need to be able to push the ball down the field. Again, credit to Auburn for not having to do it yet and for us not really seeing it, because that would be playing right into the hands of the defense, but there's going to be that time when it's going to be needed.
I'm looking back through some of the stats from this past weekend, and we talked about it, and I've seen it, but when you really sit back for just a moment to flip it back to the defensive side of the football, when's the last time, I don't care the talent difference here, when's the last time you saw a team rush for negative yards as a team? That's the quarterback, the running backs, and the receivers. As a collective unit, Ball State ran for -3 yards. On 33 attempts, they tried to run 33 different times, and they literally went backwards.
And if you didn't include the quarterback, who obviously got sacked, and that's the main reason why it was negative, that's still 18 carries for 18 yards between the other two running backs.
So every time they lined up and tried to run at Auburn, legitimately, they gained a yard.
On average, yeah. But the long of those two running backs, a long of 6 and 3. Now, Kelly, the quarterback, did have one run of 21, but again, the sack yardage negated that. But Yeah, you take that off. You hand the ball off to your running back, you're averaging a yard a carry.
I mean, that's dominant, man. That's dominant for an Auburn defensive front that was having a ton of fun on Saturday. And you mentioned this yesterday. We talked about so many dudes, and Keldrick Falk wasn't even one of them, right? I mean, it's and we think of him, obviously, in the pass rush and getting to the quarterback. And, I mean, he had a big play in the Baylor game where he chased down a dude and tackled him down the sidelines. I mean, that's what Keldrick does. But some of those dudes on the interior line right now for Auburn just seem to be, obviously, winning their one-on-ones. But even double teams and things like that, they're flat out getting after it, whether it's a pass play or they're running the football right at them. This defensive line for Auburn is eating right now.
Well, it's the same conversation that you have with the receiver unit, right? Where if you throw a cornerback and a safety over the top, all right, well, there's two guys right there. You're essentially now playing 4-on-3, or you're playing 4-on-4 now with your receiver unit, who you would definitely trust over the average cornerback, or even over the average two cornerbacks. And that's why Jackson Arnold's done such a good job of distributing the football. We talked about it on Saturday night. There were four receivers that had four grabs or more. Malcolm Simmons with four, Horatio Fields with six, Eric Singleton with four and two touchdowns, and Cam Coleman with seven receptions, 77 yards. Horatio Fields had that touchdown as well. But the defensive line and even the linebacker unit, you feel like are comparable on the defensive side, right? Because if you throw that double team on Keldrick Falk, well, there's the other guy. There's Malik Blockton. There's Xavier Atkins. There's Elijah Melendez. There's Malik Blockton or DeMarcus Riddick. I think I said Malik Blockton twice. Xavier Atkins right there as well. There's so many guys that are on this defensive side of the football. Man, we talk about in the offseason of having to go remember all of these dudes and looking at the names on paper and just reading it and audibly saying, holy cow, this Auburn defense is absolutely stacked. So, yeah, you throw two on Keldrick Falk. All right, well, there's Xavier Atkins. There's Kieron Crawford. Now, all of a sudden, you can't do that. And then Keldrick Falk, who he said at SEC Media Days, as soon as they get off the double team on me, it's my time to eat.
23 different Auburn defenders recorded a tackle on Saturday against Ball State. And someone just texted into the text box, 334-784-1067, says, let's pump the brakes on the defense and how good they were. Talent level, not even close. And yes, you're right against Ball State, but what about the Baylor game? What about the Baylor game where you held them to 24 points? Next week later, they put up, what, nearly 700 yards of offense against SMU? Right, Auburn's defense is legit. And I said coming into this season, while I wasn't quite ready to get there yet in terms of the mentality I had a year ago where the defense would never be the problem, we would never sit here on a Monday or any day and say, yeah, the defense lost Auburn a football game. We never did that last year, right? So far, the defense has done everything it's needed to, and it's playing to a level that could very well be the narrative moving forward. And here's the exciting thing. Oklahoma's offense is not that great. It's good, not great. They have not yet reached their peak. Texas A&M, good, but not great. Georgia, good, but not great. Missouri, good, but not great. Kentucky, bad. Arkansas, bad. Vanderbilt, well, we'll see what they are. I think Vanderbilt's sneaky good again, but you're better than them. Alabama, I don't know. Clearly not good against good talent, right? I have confidence in Auburn's defense, no matter who they play this season, that they're going to win. That the defense is going to do its job and win their battles and give Auburn a chance to win a football game.
There's going to be a much different task for the defense this week, and it's going to answer a lot of the questions. Offensively, maybe not as much. If you can keep doing what you're doing, I feel like you're going to put yourself in a pretty good opportunity. But South Alabama has a little bit more offensive firepower, especially throwing the ball downfield. Davenport is 29 of 38 already this season, 397 yards, completes 76% of his passes, has four touchdowns and no interceptions, has only been sacked twice as well. And their leading receivers, Voisin, has 15 receptions for 221 yards. Three of those four touchdowns from Davenport are under his name. Their tight end is a popular target as well. And then they have their little slot receiver that's caught a touchdown. It's kind of their deep threat as well. And so you're going to see a little bit more of the defensive coverage unit, which you feel like is going to hopefully turn some of the question marks from the Baylor game into exclamation points as you make your way to Norman.
We'll talk more about that as we go. We're just underway here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Come on in and be a part of it. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Or you could shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. We continue this conversation right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We continue on here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 1067 as we are kind of wrapping up the Ball State conversation and quickly looking ahead to what this weekend holds. And that's South Alabama coming to town, a team that Auburn has never played before in college football, which is kind of boggling to me. But it's also a team, Christian, that should not be overlooked, should not be one that just because it's Auburn's homecoming, Tiger fans and hopefully Hugh Freeze and the Tigers themselves are not kicking back and hanging out in the sun this week and just chilling and waiting on this game to come and go, because South Alabama is pretty darn talented.
They are. I mean, Tulane is a very, very popular G5 team to make the college football playoff, especially with Jake Ratzlaff from BYU now as their starting quarterback. I feel like that was something that got overlooked just because it happened so late.
Yeah.
But Tulane was up double-digit points, what felt like, or South Alabama actually jumped out in front of them early. I think it was 14-0 halfway through the first quarter. Tulane then scored like 20-something straight points to go up double digits, and we kind of forgot about the game in the press box, and all of a sudden it showed a little highlight play with 4 minutes to go, and it was a really close game. South Alabama fell 33-31 at home against Tulane. But man, when you're looking at some of these stats, again, Bishop Davenport went 17 of 24, threw for 231 yards, had two touchdowns as well. And Kentrell Bullock had 24 carries, over 100 yards, and a rushing touchdown as well. Davenport was 63 yards and a rushing score as well. And so when you're going and you're looking at this offense, it has a whole lot of firepower. Had 23 first downs, had 421 yards of total offense. They only committed two penalties in that game as well, which is something that we didn't necessarily highlight too much, but Auburn did have more penalties than Ball State and for more yardage in the game on Saturday. And so obviously that's something that you want to be cleaned up as well. South Alabama, not really a team that overly care about time of possession, only had 25 and a half minutes, but a team that knows how to move the football in a system that really is up in your face. As soon as they get a first down, they're right back on the clock, right back on the ball, on the line of scrimmage. And so, again, this is not a team, and especially not an offense, that you can overlook.
Well, I mean, in the first two games, the team as a whole, South Alabama, that is, has put up 38 points and 31 points. So it's something that Auburn is going to have to find a way to limit, right? And it's a South Alabama team that not only moves the football, but they score when they get down there, and they have big play potential. And they are absolutely coming into Jordan-Hare on Saturday expecting to compete and try to win this game. I mean, look at what Troy did to Clemson this past weekend. They were up double digits going into the second half. I mean, they were up on that team. And they play in the same conference. That's another Sun Belt team that people are high on, right? And so while this is the first road trip for South Alabama, let's just call it like it is. This Saturday at 11:45 a.m. in Jordan-Hare, it's not going to be sold out. It's not going to be slam-packed full. It's just not.
It's going to be much more of a relaxed atmosphere, you would imagine.
Yeah, it's homecoming, it's an early kick, it's a family game, it's probably the cheapest ticket of the year. Like, it's reality. Every team has a game in a week like this, and this is the one for Auburn, right? People are, we'll win this game, we're ready for Oklahoma next week, we're ready for the Sooners when we go on the road. Like, that's pretty much what this weekend will be. And so Auburn, and again, this is more so for Hugh Freeze and the team, because you shouldn't need a crowd in a game like this. This is another test for Hugh Freeze and his staff and his team and his dudes, right? The test in Baylor was, okay, can you get ready and prepare and win a big game to start the season? Check. You got it. Week two against Ball State, the test for Hugh Freeze was, okay, well, can you beat a team you're really supposed to? And can you continue to take what the defense gives you and dominate on both sides of the football? Check. I think you did it. This week, the test for Hugh Freeze and his program is, can you shut out all the other stuff going on? And on an early kick in a game that shouldn't be close and shouldn't really matter, can you show up and take care of your business and not get caught looking ahead to what the rest of the season has in store?
Yeah. Can you get your players up? Can you get the staff up for a game like this and go out and control the line of scrimmage like you should, control the pace of play like you should, and go out and not even from the standpoint of covering a spread or anything like that, but if you're 24-point favorites, make it look like it, right? Don't make it some game that's a 31-17 type of game where it's a stressful game going into the fourth quarter. All of the parents and grandparents who were leaning back playing with the grandkids are now leaning forward because this third down and four for Auburn's offense is obviously is so much more important than it needs to be.
We'll talk more about that as we go, but we'll shift gears and talk a little high school as Lee Scott Academy starts 3-0. Christian sits down with the head coach Buster Daniel of the Warriors football program right after this.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Christian Griffin here. And on Tuesdays at 2:30 mean that we get to sit down and continue our high school segment with Lee Scott Academy. And once again, we are joined on the phone lines by head coach, Coach Buster Daniel. Coach, appreciate your time once again. And I know there's only so many complaints that you can have about a pretty solid weekend when you're 3-0.
Yeah, you know, there's not too many complaints. You know, we left Friday night with a smile on our face, you know. But like I tell the guys, man, this is short-lived. You know, that's one game. We got to prepare for the rest of the season. You know, but enjoy it, and we're going back to work on Monday, and that's exactly what we did.
It was the cap off of a 3-game home stretch. And what did you learn about your team while you were able to play those games at home, and now you can take that on the road and hopefully continue to build?
Well, I saw our team grow up, especially in our second game of the season against Lotepoca.
Yeah,
it was a real tough game, a grind. You know, a couple of punches thrown, not literally, but you know what I mean. Just a tough game for us. And I saw them grow up there, and I saw them do things, you know, pretty much Friday night to a team that, you know, we were actually better than. Childersburg trying to get things back on the right track with a new coach and get things going the right direction. And, you know, I was proud of our kids for what, you know, how they handled the game. They went out and did what they had to do and, you know, get a good early lead and, you know, be able to play a lot of guys in the second half.
You mentioned an early lead, 40 points scored for the Warriors in the first half. Talk about what you loved about the offense and how the defense was able to respond as well.
Yeah, you know, we pretty much clicked on all cylinders on offense. You know, we had a couple of, you know, Max had a couple of errant throws, I guess you say. But, I mean, overall, he had a great night. I mean, I think he was like 19 of 23 or something like that for over 300 yards, you know, and pretty much didn't play. But, you know, maybe three quarters. But, yeah, our offense, I thought, did well. We had a couple of mistakes, of course, and that's the things we can work on by watching film. But very pleased with the offense and putting up 40 points early. And, you know, of course, our defense stepped up and did their job. You know, allowed one touchdown. I had a long run. But, you know, that's going to happen when you face athletes every week. But, yeah, I was proud of both sides of the ball, special teams. I thought did a great job. You know, we were able to get an onside kick there one time and, you know, and kind of hold their special teams down. And of course, what do you say about our kicker, little Tommy Carmichael?
Yeah.
You know, he's doing a great job, continues. He hit all of his extra points the other night, getting better and better each day. So I was proud of our team as a whole, across the board, special teams, offense and defense.
We talked about that on the Lee Scott Sports Network during the game. It was two of the prettiest onside kicks that I had ever seen. Was that a strategy going into it? Again, being able to recover that second one with that 7-0 lead, trying to double dip on the Tigers?
Yeah, that's something we worked on all week. We saw a guy on film that, you know, we could, I thought, take advantage of. And, you know, we went after him. you know, if they got the ball there, I trust our defense. And that's where we got to, you know, you can't be scared to do stuff like that. If you trust your defense, you can actually take those chances. And I do. You know, I trust Coach Osmond, our coaching staff, and our defense to put us in a situation like that and be able to hold teams. So, yeah, I mean, that was something we worked on all week. You know, unlike a couple of years ago where we had, you know, Matt Rolator kick the ball in end zone every time, we don't have that right now.
Right.
You know, Tommy will be able to do that one day. But right now, you know, we got to do what we got to do and, you know, place the ball on kickoffs and try onside kick sometimes.
Playing 3A football, I know you've coached it at many different levels, but down here at 3A, it's a little bit different where you have a lot of these kids playing both sides of the ball, going both ways. What does the strategy go into, again, playing a guy too many snaps, wanting to preserve him for the offensive side of the football or the defensive side of the football? How much of that is strategy versus just seeing how a kid looks on a Friday night?
Well, you know, the strategy starts back in the summer at workouts. You know, we know going in that we're going to have to play guys both ways and on special teams. You know, we have some kids that never leave the field unless we get them off to get a, you know, a quick shot of water. But we know that going in the summer, so we have to train in the summer. We have to be in great shape, you know, and which turned out we didn't have any cramps our first game, which is unusual. So the guys were in great shape. They know what's going to be called upon them. To play both sides, and you know they go into the summer knowing that, and work extremely hard to get in that kind of shape. So I don't know if it's a strategy, but like I said, we just know going in, and we got to play guys the whole game, and you know they got to be in great shape.
You had your two so-called preseason games with ACA and Lochapoca, that rivalry game that you mentioned where you learned a lot about your team, but the real season got started last Friday night, the game we're talking about against Childersburg. It was a 47-19 victory, again, capping off the three-game home stretch for the Lee Scott Academy Warriors. What does 1-0 in the region feel like, and how does that feel like you can propel yourself with the rest of this gauntlet coming up?
Well, you know, we talked to kids all last week about, you know, we can't – that was the first game on our road to the playoffs. You know, we had to win it to have a chance, and they knew that going in. But, you know, and this week we're taking over a new league. We're going to go into it like we're 0-0. You know, we don't look at the records. The records can deceive you sometimes. So we got to go in and prepare for each team. It don't matter who it is, where they're from, what the record is. We got to prepare the same way each week. But you know, it feels great to be 1-0 in the region. You know, it's a game. It's gone by now. It's in the past. We got to look forward to Beulah this week.
Well, you mentioned Beulah, the Bobcats, your first road test of the young season. Before we dive into that Beulah team, what are you hoping to learn from your team? Again, the mental calendar, or the mental clock, rather, kind of messed up having to get on the bus, having to get things done a little bit earlier on a Friday afternoon. You're playing at a place that you haven't played before. What do you want to learn about your team on Friday night?
Well, you know, I don't know if it's so much to learn about them. It's just they got to understand that it's a football field. It may not be on our campus, but it's the same field. It's the same dimensions. Nothing changes. We just try to make it our home game. We don't focus on being on the road or being at home. We just know it's another football game. We got to line up, kick it off, and play our best game to be successful each and every Friday night, no matter where we're playing, whether it's home or on the road.
Well, again, talk to us about this Beulah team. You mentioned that records could be deceiving. This team coming in to play the Beulah Bobcats 1-2. But, again, a team that Lee Scott played very, very close at home this time last year. What do you expect to see from the Beulah Bobcats on their side of the football field?
Well, I'll see a well-coached team that's got, again, you know, I tell you this each and every week. We are playing a team that has more athletes than we do. And if you don't control those guys or keep them contained, you know, they can beat you. So that's the kind of thing we're going to look at this week. We, you know, we're playing a team, again, that's better athletes than us. But we just gotta play our game. You know, got to do things the right way, be in the right spot, take care of Lee Scott, and, you know, let the chips fall where they may. We just got to take care of us.
We're going on the road for the first time, but want to dive back to those three games. What is the Lee Scott fan base? What have they meant to you and this team being able to go out there on a Friday night, knowing they're going to travel well, yes, on the road, but being able to have everybody at home, the season started off right and continue to build that confidence?
Yeah, we got a great crowd. We got great kids, you know, students, and, you know, they support us. And honestly, Christian, you know, I don't really see them on Friday night. I really don't even hear them.
Sure.
I know they're there. You know, because I have the game, they're all over the field, and I appreciate all the support we have from our administration and our kids and our faculty. You know, you could always want it to be bigger, but I think our stands are full every night, and we do travel well. I expect a good crowd Friday night at Beulah, and, you know, they always support the Warriors and whatever we're playing, whatever game it is. So we expect the same thing on Friday night.
Lee Scott Academy taking on the Bobcats of Beulah over on AU 100.3, AUHits.com, and the Radio Alabama app. We're here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line talking with Lee Scott Academy football's head coach, Coach Buster Daniel. We appreciate your time as always and looking forward to another big-time win on Friday night.
Sounds good, Christian. Thanks for everything you do, man, and go Warriors.
That's Lee Scott Academy's head football coach, Coach Buster Daniel, joining us on the phone lines again. And as we mentioned, Lee Scott Academy taking on the Bobcats of Beulah this Friday night over on AU 100.3, AUHits.com, and the Radio Alabama app. We mentioned the 3-0 start, kind of finishing off the homestand with on a really nice win streak. You won all three games against Alabama Christian Academy. The really, really good game in a new-bound rivalry, a new-formed rivalry with the Lochipoca Indians, and then this past Friday with the Childersburg Tigers. Lee Scott looking to go to 4-0 and 2-0 in region play this Friday night. Jacob, I know Auburn High at home now for one of the first times this entire season. Our calendars are kind of flipped. Lee Scott had four of their first five games at home, and then it's four of the final five games on the road. Auburn High School is just about the opposite.
Yeah, I mean, we're literally going to play our second game at home all season this weekend, or this Friday, and we now have four straight home games for Auburn High. So that'll be nice to be at the dock for the next several weeks. We've got Enterprise coming in, and they're licking their wounds after being hit pretty hard by a Dothan squad that I was actually talking to my buddy, who is the voice of Enterprise, and was talking to him today on the phone, and he said this is the best Dothan team he's seen in quite some time, and they got a bunch of speed out there, a bunch of athletes, and so they just weren't ready. And that's an Enterprise team too that lost a bunch. I mean, there's a bunch of dudes playing college ball now from that Enterprise
squad.
There's
a couple of them wearing orange and blue.
Yeah, exactly. And so they're in a rebuild a little bit, but still really talented, still a really good team. And so Enterprise is going to make the trip up here this weekend. But yes, we have four straight home games for Auburn High, so looking forward to that and looking to build off of an emotional win last week against Opelika.
And isn't Dothan your final game of the year at Dothan?
Yeah.
So that could be not necessarily trip-wise or drive-time-wise, but could be a very, very fun game to kind of determine the region, or at least the standings.
Yeah, we'll see. Dothan plays, believe Dothan plays at Central this week, so Central Phoenix City. So there's some big games going on, and this region is about to get dicey. We're only 1 week into region play, but yet there's some teams already trying to separate themselves. So that's going to be this weekend, or this Friday rather. Auburn will play hosting Enterprise. You guys are going to go on the road to Beulah, right?
Yes. Yeah. Oh yeah. It was a good game last year. Lee Scott was able to pull away in the second half. There was a weird start to the game. Beulah fumbled the opening kickoff, and Lee Scott went down and scored. And then it was kind of a defensive game until it worked its way into the second half, and they were able to bleed a lot of clock and kind of double dip on the Bobcats. But, man, I tell you what, for those that are used to a normal Lee Scott Academy offense, where it almost gives off in the most complimentative way possible an Army-Navy type of offense, not quite with like the triple option, the wing T or anything like that, but from the, it's first and 10. All right, it's second and 6. Now it's third and 2, first down. Second and 7, third and 4, fourth and 1, first down. And you look up at the clock and there's already 4 or 5 minutes gone by and you're just now hitting midfield. It's the exact opposite for Lee Scott Academy this year, man. Max Hammer has brought a really, really solid passing attack to this offense, the ability to get the guys out wide in space against Lochipoca. They kind of figured out that the screen game can work as just an extended part of the run. But again, you're getting guys out in space and you have a couple tackles pulled, or you have some blockers out with the wide receiver units, with the tight ends as well, to where it's 4-on-3. You make one man miss and you're taking it to the house. Last week it was a little bit of that, but it was also throwing the ball downfield. You saw Max Hammer layer the football really well You saw him throw it into tight windows when needed and show off the arm strength that I got to see last year more of on the baseball diamond, but getting to see a lot more of it this year. And then you counter that with Braxton Cox and Brooke Zachary in the backfield. It is a very, very fun offense to call, a very fun offense to watch, and very, very different than what we've seen. And Coach Buster Daniel has mentioned it a couple times, of it's a little bit different than what he's traditionally used to running, at least, Scott. Him and Coach Wade, they call themselves the old school brothers, the old school football coaches that want to ground and pound, that want to control the clock, that want to control the line of scrimmage and go down and kind of pinch the other team's offense of, okay, well, now you're down two touchdowns. You got to go into a little bit more of a panic mode. This is a team that doesn't necessarily care about time of possession, but they seem to do everything well, and they've done it well so far.
Just an update as well. Opelika will be playing JAG this week. They'll be hosting JAG. And so Sylacauga's coming down to play Beauregard, which is a big deal. Smith Station is going to be playing Carver. And then, as I mentioned earlier, Central and Dothan are going to be playing this week as well. So that's just kind of some of the teams in the area that are going to be in action on Friday night around the high school football landscape as well. We'll take our final break here in hour number one. Come back and talk a little Auburn baseball. Yeah, that's right. The SEC schedule got released earlier today. We talk about that and wrap up hour number one after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7, and we talk a little Auburn baseball. That's right, as we have now the SEC schedule for all SEC baseball teams coming up in 2026. But the one we care about the most is the Auburn schedule, of course. And look, there are some really fun matchups across the SEC in baseball this season. But overall, I'm really excited about the schedule that Auburn got, the draw that Butch Thompson and his team got. Here's what they're going to do. Starting opening weekend of SEC play, March 13th through the 15th, Auburn's going to open up on the road at Missouri. All right, Auburn's going to open up at Missouri for baseball. They'll come home for Texas, go to Alabama. They'll start the month of April at home against Arkansas. They'll back that up with a home series against Kentucky. They go to Florida in the middle of April. They welcome Oklahoma to Plainsman Park. They'll start the month of May at Texas A&M. They'll also go to Stark Vegas. And then they'll end SEC play at home at Plainsman Park to host the Georgia Bulldogs. So again, at Missouri, home for Texas, at Alabama, home for Arkansas, home for Kentucky, at Florida, home for Oklahoma, at Texas A&M, at Mississippi State, and home for Georgia.
You're going to get to know a lot about what this Missouri team did in the offseason. Again, the team that finished dead last in the SEC last year, but took a lot of pride over the offseason, took a lot of focus on rebuilding that team. And so it'll be really interesting to see what that team looks like really early. Really excited that you get Texas, Arkansas, and Oklahoma at home, again, kind of scattered throughout. And then, yeah, the fact that you only have to go on the road once for back-to-back weekends, and that's in May. That's Texas A&M and Mississippi State. That those final 3 weeks, the month of May, is going to be a whole lot of fun. Again, with an Auburn team that's projected to make a lot of noise in Southeastern Conference play, at A&M, at Mississippi State, and then home for Georgia. You notice LSU is not on this schedule, mm-hmm. which could shake some things up. It's been a fantastic rivalry on the diamond over the past couple of years. But yeah, the draw is not anything too terrible, I wouldn't say. And the ability for Auburn to have a couple of these home games or the home series in between the tough road series before you hit May should be a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, road trips to Tuscaloosa is nothing crazy. Yes, it's the rivalry, obviously, but that's a place that Auburn has won plenty of times. Going to Gainesville will be tough. That'll be fun. I look for Florida to obviously be a really good team again this year, and excited for Auburn and hopefully a lot of Auburn fans to be able to go and make that trip.
They'll find a way to make that their Final Four ring night.
Yeah, they will. They'll find a way to make sure everybody watches them get their rings, hang a banner, all that stuff for sure. And then you said a back-to-back road trips at Texas A&M and at Mississippi State in the month of May. But the home slate is really, really fun. Texas, Arkansas, Kentucky, Oklahoma, and Georgia. I mean, for me to rank those 1 through 5 in terms of just what I'm most excited for, I would go, I'm going to go Arkansas at 1, Texas 2, Georgia 3, Oklahoma 4, Kentucky 5. That's how I would rank those. Arkansas 1 because it's Arkansas. Texas at 2 because it's Texas and what they have. Georgia 3 because we know how much fun that rivalry can be, and Auburn's got some ground to make up there. Then Oklahoma because you welcome them to Plainsman Park. And then Kentucky because we just don't know what that Kentucky team's going to be.
From the standpoint of games and series, yes, I would flip Georgia and Texas just because of the rivalry right there between the two and how good Georgia is as well. But, yeah, just from a talent standpoint for your home games, I think you have a much more positive home slate than you possibly could.
I think it's pretty balanced of home and away, right? I mean, you expect to win the road series. Just looking at it on paper right now, you would expect to win the home series or the road series against Missouri. You would expect to win the home series against Kentucky. You would expect of your other four at home and on the road, I mean, split all those.
I say you win the series against OU, which puts you at 6 wins already. If you go 1-2 between Georgia, Texas, and Arkansas, that puts you at 9 home wins.
Yeah.
Which is still a great spot to be, to where if you can win the series at Missouri, that obviously puts you at 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, and 15 if you only win one of the other four road games.
And I think this team and program have higher expectations than that in 25 and 26. But should be a fun SEC slate for Butch Thompson and Auburn baseball. Hour number one is in the books. Stick around. We got a whole lot more coming up in hour number two.
Is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what Sports Talk Radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us. And if you missed any of hour number one, we will have today's show posted for you as a podcast, so you can go and check that out if you would like, on our station website at ESPNAU.com, or just search On the Line wherever you get your podcasts. In hour number one, we talked kind of final thoughts on Auburn versus Ball State, what we saw from the football team this past Saturday, and more on that and kind of looking ahead here in hour number two. But kind of put a bow on that. Plus, we also had some high school football talk in there as well, as Christian sat down with Lee Scott Academy's head football coach Buster Daniel. And then Auburn Baseball released their SEC conference schedule. So we got to dive into that, talk about some of the very cool series that the Tigers are going to get to play in with Butch Thompson this season. So all of that was in hour number one. If you missed it, check it out on our station website in the podcast center at ESPNAU.com.
Here in hour number two, we're talking biggest takeaways in college football from week two. Who is legit? Who is not? Is it time to press the panic button for any of these teams? Or is it time to press the excited button or the truth button for a couple of these teams that have overperformed through these first couple of weeks? Any title contenders, any pretenders, any changes to the college football projections just yet? We're talking about that. We're talking about some reports from DJ Durkin here on here from practice this afternoon of how he was not very happy about the way that his defense played, specifically in a couple of up-tempo drills where the offense marched right down the field. And we're going to talk about why we love hearing stuff like that from DJ Durkin and his side of the football on a Tuesday afternoon. Also, some updates on the defensive side of the football from an injury standpoint as well. The running back room injuries, we're talking all of that in hour number one before we talk about some big impacts that recruits had last Saturday night inside Jordan-Hare, talking about where Auburn stands right now, who are some names that you could look for and look out for as Auburn continues to push for commits and flips in there as well. All of that coming up here in a jam-packed hour number two. He is Jacob Goins. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for being here with us on ESPN 106.7. Whether you're just now tuning in or you've been with us for the entire first hour, we appreciate everybody for being here with us, whether that's ESPN 106.7, ESPN.AU.com, or that Radio Alabama app, which, man, we're telling you, is where you need to go. It's where you can keep up with all the action with Auburn football, Auburn University football, Auburn High School football, and Lee Scott Academy in there as well. But, Jacob, we dove into some of the biggest games from week two yesterday and broke down our projections that we had for them, the final scores, some of the games that were the most surprising that we didn't necessarily pick. But some of your biggest takeaways from week two, are you ready to press the panic button for any team quite yet?
Yes, but I want to go a different direction. And the teams at the top of the Big Ten look really, really, really good. Okay, Ohio State looks really good. Oregon looks really good. Penn State will be fine. Okay, I know they didn't look overly impressive against FIU this weekend, but those three teams are legit.
Yes, and with Penn State too, you feel like defense is where they're going to continue to shine, to where it's like any points you put up are just a bonus.
I think those are the three best teams in college football right now. I think Ohio State, Oregon, Penn State are 1, 2, and 3.
Is LSU playing that down game against Louisiana Tech, only winning 23-7, is that putting a damper on that, even though they went out and beat Clemson in fake Death Valley in week one?
It was an impressive win, there's no doubt, but I need to see more from LSU because we've been burned before by Brian Kelly and LSU. So I need to see more from LSU, and they have a chance to do it this weekend. If Florida actually looks like they have life this weekend, that's going to be my problem. Is Clemson gave LSU that win because Clemson just refused to get up off the mat and go take it from them. But the problem is Florida may look the exact same way and may just look piss poor this weekend, to be quite honest with you, and LSU could just boat race them in a game that might not matter by the fourth quarter.
Either that, or it would be the Billy Napier in Florida way of going into Death Valley and finding a way to win by two touchdowns, yep, which then would give you even more answers on LSU.
Correct. And so for LSU, I need to see more, but Ohio State, Oregon, and Penn State, they all look legit, and they've got the dudes to make it happen. I had questions on Dante Moore, whether he would be the guy or whether their offensive line would be it. They've answered those quickly, and I know they haven't played anybody crazy. They played Northwestern this weekend. That's not going to give us the answers there either, but they're doing it and doing it the right way. And so college football better be worried about what the Big Ten's doing at the top, because I think their top three are better than the SEC's top three, which we don't even know who that is, or the ACC's top three, which we still don't know who that is, or the Big 12's top three, because we don't know who that is either.
Oregon is such a scary team as well, because you feel like Dante Moore is obviously the X factor, but also was the question mark coming into this offense with Dan Lanning. But he threw for 266 yards against Okie State in like a quarter and a half. Noah Whittington is obviously their main back, but man, they have Makai Hughes, which is the kid from Tulane that we haven't talked about enough, that could be the best 1-2 punch in college football, to where when Dante Moore adds A, his running game, but then B, gets his receivers involved, it could be a very, very scary offense to look out for.
In terms of panic button, just kind of looking around, I think Louisville had an underwhelming performance on Friday night against James Madison. That's a Louisville team that I think is solid. I think LSU, we kind of mentioned them. Texas was fine against San Jose State. Clemson better figure it out, man. Clemson better get their ish together, because they obviously lost against LSU, and they were down double digits to Troy going into the half. It was 16-3 at halftime in Death Valley, where Troy had a lead over Clemson. They come back and win it 27-16, but are we really impressed with that? That says more about Troy than it does Clemson to me, because of how good that Troy team is. South Carolina, I know that game was delayed and had some stoppages and things like that, I get it, but their offense is in trouble. And what a crazy statement to say with Lenora Sellers running the show. Their offense is in big, big trouble if they can't figure it out.
Well, yeah, that game could have very, very easily been a 17-10 win for South Carolina. You had two punt returns for a touchdown. And shout out to the Beamer family, man. They've always found a way to get it done on special teams. And South Carolina, that punt returner now has three straight punt returns for a touchdown going back to the Syracuse game in week one in Atlanta, which ultimately got them the victory. Yet that being said, you're not going to be able to rely on them. We've talked about how good Lenora Sellers is, but if you don't have an offensive line that can help you, or a running game that can help you outside of what Sellers can do with his legs, you're not going to be able to have time to throw it to guys like Nick Harbor or anybody out there wide.
How about Tennessee this weekend? Ain't nobody talking about Tennessee. Nobody's talking about how they demolished Syracuse in week one, which we're seeing Syracuse isn't all that, but they did it easily on both sides of the football. And they did it again this weekend, 72-17. I know it's East Tennessee State. I get that. But so far through two games, the question on if Joey Aguilar was the right answer, well, look out in Los Angeles and see if Nico's the right answer out in UCLA. It ain't. And Joey Aguilar's getting it done right there. Overall, it was one of those weird weeks in college football. Are you hitting the panic button on anybody? Other than Florida?
Not the panic button. I guess I'm not even pressing the panic button on Florida yet, just from the standpoint of we expected this month and even into October to be a gauntlet. That was just the one game that you felt like you needed to get. This weekend will tell us even more about that South Florida team as they take on Miami. Could be a very fun game. I don't see South Florida being able to do it two, if not 3 weeks in a row. I think that game's like 16.5 or 17.5. Man, I'll take Miami, whatever the case may be, on that side of the football. Not necessarily the panic button yet, just because it's only week two, and I don't want to contradict myself with AP poll votings and things like that if I'm going to sit here and panic about a bunch of teams. But man, you can go ahead and tell a lot of the teams that have figured it out, at least early. Iowa State, I think, is a team in that conversation that you don't necessarily have a favorite or a top three in the Big 12, but I'd be willing to say that Iowa State's right up there as one of the favorites in the Big 12. I think Baylor, honestly, is in that conversation right there with them. Texas Tech is a team that has kind of quietly crept up the rankings. And again, I know that we're only working our way into week three, but there were people that had Texas Tech winning their conference, and we both sat there and said, yeah, maybe this time next year, if not in 2 years, then I can see that being a legitimate argument in a legitimate scenario, but they've done exactly what they needed to do. Yes, they beat arguably the worst team in college football last week, but they worked their way into the top 25. I think Utah is a really, really good team. Devin Dampier, again, that was the kid from New Mexico that Auburn saw in Jordan-Hare about this time last year, right? That was the game right after Cal that Auburn took care of business. I think it was 45-21, but you saw what he was able to do. He's now out there with Whittingham in Utah. He's a Ute, and I think that's a really, really good team in there as well.
What about the Missouri-Kansas game? Seems like that game has gone under the radar too, a game that a lot of people had Kansas upsetting Missouri. I won't name names, Christian, where this game was being played, an old school rivalry. 21-6 at the end of the first quarter. Kansas was on top, and it was, uh-oh, here we go. Missouri, Drinkwitz did it again. He's crashing and burning. Pribula's not the answer, right? But then all of a sudden, here comes Missouri. And they did it, Christian, defensively. Pitching a shutout in the second quarter, just 3 points in the third, just 7 points in the fourth. Their offense comes alive, 30 of 39, 334 through the air, and three tutties for Pribula. Is it Pribula or Pribula? How are we? I've heard it pronounced both ways.
I think it's Pribula.
Well, then Pribula it is. And so much for a quarterback battle in Como, because he's the man. He's yes. It. He's the answer. Comeback win, 42-31. Not only did they were down double digits, they come back and they win by double digits against a really talented Kansas team, and quietly Missouri's 2-0.
They are. And I think by no means do I want to take credit away from Missouri, because in a game like this, it's hard to say that you learn more about one team than you do the other. But I think the biggest reason that Kansas had so many question marks and people weren't ready to make the full jump that I did with Kansas, and still feel like that can be the case, but it's the running game and their ability to stop the run. Those were the two things for the Kansas Jayhawks. And you give up 261 yards to two Missouri running backs. Jamal Roberts had 13 carries for 143 yards and a touchdown. And then Ahmad Hardy, who's their big go-to back, had 25 carries for 112 yards and a touchdown. That shows you, yes, that Kansas does not have any sort of running game, but going back to giving credit to Missouri of their ability to run the football and dominate the clock and not feel like they need to use the passing game to work their way back into a game. You look at the time of possession in this game. Have you seen this number? Kansas had the ball for 19 minutes.
Yeah.
Missouri controlled this game from the time of possession standpoint. Went 10 of 19 on third down, 4 of 5 on fourth down. This year might be a year where you see more teams go for it on fourth down than you've ever seen before. You saw Baylor do it the first 2 weeks. You saw it all the time against Auburn. You saw it even more against SMU, and they were doing it at their own 35-40-yard line in the first quarter. So it's going to show you that teams continue to trust their offensive game planning more and more, because half the time when you look at these games, the average yards per play is 5 or 6, and so many points now can be scored. Or on the flip side, it's, okay, well, if we don't get it, we're not going to get the ball back for 8 more minutes because of the way that this clock runs in the new college football, where even when you run out of bounds or get a first down, it doesn't stop. Or it stops to allow you to move the chains, but then picks right back up again. There's so many different ways that college football can be played to where I could see more and more teams going for it on fourth down.
Yeah, and I think it's just the aggressive mindset, right, of, hey, we would rather go down swinging than just give up and give you the football back.
It goes right back to the conversation that we've had of, man, if your team is up by 3, but there's a team that's about to go score a touchdown with 2 minutes left, the legitimate conversation and argument of letting that team go and score, because you don't necessarily, it's not a, you don't trust your defense, but rather than being on defense, being on your heels, it's okay, let's go know that we're down 4, we're down 3, and we need a touchdown. We're going to give up a lead to go trust our offense to go score a 75-yard touchdown drive.
Well, there was a situation like that on Sunday in the NFL.
Exactly.
What game was that? I forget. It wasn't Sunday Night Football, was it?
It was
Sunday Night Football?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it was, yeah, Josh Allen went down and they were sitting there talking about, well, if they go down and score, if they let the Ravens score, then they have a chance again. And you didn't think it could possibly be the case, but it worked out that exact way of, you go be the team on offense and you'll trust your team to go drive 75 yards than stopping another team for a minute and a half and holding them to a field goal.
I want to go back to Missouri really quickly before we take our break, because they're 2-0. They host Louisiana this weekend. They'll win that one. Reminder, this is a Missouri team that starts their first six games in a row at home in Como, okay? They host Louisiana, then they host South Carolina, which could be pretty interesting. We already thought this could be a fun game, but if South Carolina can't get it figured out, and they have no sleeper this weekend either, with Vanderbilt, okay? And yes, I mean that. Missouri could very easily win that game. They could win their game against UMass, and then for an 11 a.m. kick in Como on October 11th, here comes the Alabama Crimson Tide. And who knows what Alabama's looking like at that moment, because they play Wisconsin this weekend, Georgia the following game. There's a bye week in there. And then they play Vanderbilt before they have to play Missouri. There's a real shot. And we talked about this before, but even more so now. Missouri could be undefeated when they come to Jordan-Hare Stadium in mid-October on... what day is that?
I think it's October 18th. Yeah.
There's a real situation here, folks, where Missouri is a top 15, flirting with a top 10 team, and not a single loss when they walk into Jordan-Hare. And on the flip side, who knows what Auburn's record could look like? Could Auburn be undefeated? Sure. Could Auburn have three losses? Yeah, they could. And this game could get dicey in Jordan-Hare.
It really could. And I don't expect them to lose both of South Carolina or Alabama. I'd say at worst they split them.
I think so.
Where you're 5-1 at worst.
That's a top 25 team.
It's a top 20 team, especially with a win over South Carolina and or Alabama.
And that game's a flex too. So it could be 3:30, 4:30, 6 o'clock, 8 o'clock. It could be anywhere. It will be somewhat under the lights for Auburn and Missouri. What you hope is that Missouri has a good record, has a good resume. And you hope that Auburn does, too, for that to potentially be, I mean, you're talking top. If Auburn is 5-1 at that point, you're talking about a top 20 team in college football.
Yeah, you're talking about arguably a top 15 game inside Jordan-Hare, to where even if that's a 4:30 kick or the 4 o'clock ESPN kick, second half is a night game.
Yeah, could be a lot of fun coming down the stretch for Auburn and Missouri. We'll take a break, come back, and talk more about Auburn with some health updates and some updates from practice early in the week. We have that coming up for you next.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. A few minutes before we get to our bottom of the hour break. And I want to go back to something that happened yesterday that we were not able to fully dive into. It's the Darrell Robinson stuff and the fact that there was a freak. I don't know if you call it an injury or just an accident, medical condition that he woke up Sunday morning and had to get rushed to the hospital for blood. And the latest updates, I don't know if you've seen anything different, Christian, but, I mean, again, he had to get rushed to the hospital on Sunday for something that I don't even fully understand.
No, and they haven't gone overly in-depth about everything that happened. They said that it was not, again, some sort of – you don't think it was from, like, a tackle or anything, because he didn't get tackled on one of his two runs on Saturday night, but said that it was just some sort of freak accident that he noticed himself when he woke up on Sunday morning. There was a large collection of blood on his thigh. And so he was – rushed for a surgical procedure and said that he could be out for a few games just because of making sure that, A, he's okay, making sure that his body is still good to go. But, yeah, a big-time blow for the Auburn running back room. Again, that was a game that Damari Alston did not tote the football. He was without pads. He was in street clothes with the jersey. And so now that could be another really, really big blow. And – That's why Auburn's put so much pride in their running back room with so many big names. But Looks like guys like Omar Mapson could make a much bigger impact than he was probably expecting to make his freshman year. But, man, you've heard so much about him in this entire room as a whole. It's just unfortunate that it comes from the shadows of two guys possibly missing even more time.
Yeah, and that's why we talked about in the offseason how exciting and how much of a benefit it was for this Auburn football team to have so many options in the running back room, right? It's like, okay, yeah, we didn't expect Alvin Henderson and Omar Mapson to be go-to guys and still the possibility of redshirting them, but now you're looking at a possibility where if you can't get Damari Alston back or Darrell Robinson or whatever the case may be, then yeah, you're going to have to run some of those guys. I did see and hear that Damari was back at practice today with a non-contact jersey on. I think he went through some of the just kind of warm-up stuff. I don't think he actually had any like true practice run between the tackles type of stuff, but Damari was at least back out there.
Yeah, we were told he's going to be a game-time decision for Saturday, and so you would imagine unless he's 130% that could carry the football a couple times when needed. But if you go back to late in the fourth quarter in Waco against Baylor, that was when Jackson had to do a lot of the between the tackles running. That was when he was keeping the ball on third and short and fourth and one when he had that touchdown run. That was because Damari was banged up. They didn't want to overuse Jeremiah Cobb. And so that was when they were bringing guys like Eric Singleton in motion. And Jackson Arnold was the one. I remember the one even before the fourth and one keeper where everybody went with Eric Singleton and he ended up scoring. It was a third and three right around midfield, if not on the Auburn side of the 50. And Jackson Arnold kept it himself and lowered his head and got the first down. And he was asked about that play later in the postgame and just said, yeah, I mean, I wasn't letting go of the football. I saw a little pocket, and I knew I needed to get 3 yards. And so not something that you hope to see too many times, but shows you and gives you some sort of comfort level that your quarterback is willing and able to go out and do that when needed.
Yeah, so there's a couple of other things that we want to get to, and we'll probably do so after the break. It's some thoughts and comments from DJ Durkin on the defense. It's also a concern I never thought we would have, but the kicking game might be an issue for Auburn, which, again, it's wild to think about for this program, not even this team, just this program in general, but possible defensive concerns and definite kicking concerns for Auburn going into a game where you hope you don't need it, but my goodness, you hope that you have it, right? I mean, you hope that it's not a problem because you're going to need it moving forward in SEC play. We talk kicking game, we talk defense, and anything else that you want to talk about, give us a call, 334-321-1390. We've got 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
Through hour number two, you've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Phone lines are open if you want to be on the show. If you have thoughts on Auburn beating Ball State, if you want to go ahead and start talking Auburn and South Alabama, where the Tigers are expected to be expecting several different options and different schemes and things from South Alabama this weekend. We'll talk about that the closer we get to Saturday, but you can give us a call, 334-321-1390. Again, 334-321-1390, or you could shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. And a couple of other things we want to talk about with this team, just general conversations. Let's start on the defensive side of the football, Christian, something you wanted to highlight, because we were praising them in the first half of the show, the first hour of the show, because they did play well against Ball State. just doesn't sound like that's carried over into the early days of practice this week.
Yeah, and it wasn't necessarily the entire practice. And for all you know, this is something that coaches are using, again, just to continue to motivate, because it just feels a little bit natural when you come off of a big-time win where your defense played really, really well, and that Monday, maybe early into Tuesday, you kind of go a little bit through the motions. You're still trying to recover from Saturday, still banged up a little bit, trying to just kind of go through the motions, trying to get the days over with. But Auburn practice today, DJ Durkin was not overly pleased with a couple of the defensive drives or the parts of defense during practice. The offense apparently ran right through the defense on a couple of the up-tempo drills where you're trying to march down the field like a two-minute type of offense. And Auburn did it two or three times, marched down the field and scored, which on the offensive side is really good news. That shows that they continue to move the football and have success. But Durkin obviously took that competitively and did not like what he saw from his defense. And I'm not going to press any sort of panic button or anything like that. The only reason that I want to highlight it is simply because I love hearing that from the defensive coach, right? The fact that you're getting up into these players' grills again, trying to fire them up on a Tuesday afternoon when they're trying to just go through the motions. You feel like that's continuing to put them on the right track. And if there's anybody that knows the way that a defensive mind should think, it's DJ Durkin. We've talked about that since that hire was made, of how that could be one of the best hires that Auburn makes ever, just on the defensive side of the football. The name recruits itself, does Auburn and DJ Durkin. So again, I love being able to hear things like that. It's the same type of scenario. Obviously, it won't go viral like the rest of them did, but like the video of Hugh throwing his visor in practice when Jackson Arnold didn't make the right read.
Right.
I love stuff like that because it shows that you're coaching, shows that you're not just standing there on the sideline watching things go wrong and your hands are on your hips or your arms are crossed. You're not just watching it from a distance. You're right there, and if you're getting upset, you're getting fiery, you're getting mad, shows that you're not taking any sort of day with going through the motions or mediocrity.
Because in a game like you're going to have this weekend against South Alabama, look, I'm going to say the most obvious statement that exists. Auburn is more talented than them.
Right.
At every position, and Auburn's too deep, and Auburn's walk-ons are as just as talented as South Alabama starters, right? So for the defense, yeah, it's very easy to say, well, I mean,
I can take these two plays off.
Yeah, I mean, we had great success against Ball State. I mean, it's at this point, yeah, we're fine, right? We're fine.
Yeah, Durkin felt like the king of the castle.
Yeah. You have South Alabama coming in this weekend where the defense feels that they can just go through those motions and just be fine. But DJ Durkin, while he might be worried about South Alabama, and some people think he should be, he's concerned with Oklahoma. He's concerned with Texas A&M. He's concerned with Georgia and Missouri and these teams that you're going to see down the line that you have to get ready for and take advantage of a weekend like you're going to have.
Well, yeah, and it's that, and it's, again, it's the day-to-day. It's the way that you go out and practice on that Tuesday, right? Rather than looking at the opponent, you have to continue to coach as hard as you can because, again, you know what's coming later in the season, right? I mean, it's rather than us sitting there having the conversations of, yeah, it's only Ball State, it's only South Alabama, they're looking at it as you're playing another team on the other side of the field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So there's the defensive stuff.
Wah, wah, wee, wah.
And then as we mentioned earlier, the kicking competition and the kicking concerns, that's the C word I would use, is the concerns. The fact that clearly, McPherson is just not good to go outside of a PAT. I mean, that's pretty obvious given what we've seen so far. And that's nothing against him. He's just not ready to go on any sort of a longer field goal. The only thing we've seen him do this year are those PAT distance kicks. And then we saw Towns Magoo hurt himself in a game on Saturday in a kick where he seemed to drag the ground first. And reports are from Hugh Freeze last night during Tiger Talk and then confirmed again today there's an open kicking competition this week. Auburn's in week three of the season, and you don't know who your starting kicker is outside of 35 yards. That's not good, Christian. That's not good at all. Again, you shouldn't need it this weekend against South Alabama, but my guess is going to be between a road game at Oklahoma and a road game at Texas A&M, you're probably going to have to bang home a 45-yard field goal at some point. You're probably going to have to do it. Just keep yourself in the game, take the lead, or win the game. And the fact that Auburn is trying to figure that out right now, and reports are saying that the kickers did not have a good day today at all whatsoever, that's concerning to me long term.
Yeah, we did see Alex once in the Baylor game, but again, nothing more than a 28-yard field goal, to where accuracy is obviously not the concern. But even on that field goal in Waco, it didn't have any sort of oomph to it, right? It just, you saw the accuracy and you saw the lift. That was what you saw. And so I believe Free said that, yeah, they're having an open kicking competition between Tyles McGough and Gibbs, who is from Birmingham Southern, which we did see in the second half on the field or on the kickoff side of things, because again, Towns has been the place kicker just because of the power. But Gibbs, I thought he did a great job on kickoffs, didn't allow a true return. And so obviously that brings some sort of confidence. But yeah, when you have Hugh Freeze saying we're having an open battle between a couple of guys for anything further than 40 yards, if you're going to come down to a kid that doesn't really have any confidence in Towns McGough, or you're going to go to a kid who hasn't kicked in an Auburn jersey yet, when legitimately one of those field goal opportunities, like what you're saying, could come halfway through the third or halfway through the fourth quarter when you're up by a touchdown, trying to go up double digits or trying to tie the game in Norman, when the entire crowd is chanting your name, begging you to fail, it doesn't bring too much confidence for the Auburn sideline.
And according to the people who were at practice today, we were unfortunately not able to be there. Gibbs' name was the one who got called for a game kick, like an in-game kick, one where the whole team's around him, everybody's going crazy, and he missed it. So, again, that's concerning to me for a program that just hasn't had kicking problems. And what sucks is the fact that it's because of injuries. It's because of health problems. It's not because they're in their head, right? We saw that with Towns last year when McPherson got sick, to where McGough just got thrown into some bad situations. And part of that wasn't his fault, but it is what it is. This year, it's just, man, Auburn's got a kicking issue. And you've got to get that figured out. And I don't care. Host kicking tryouts if you have to at this point, man, because clearly something's not right in that room. And whether it is health or injury or mental or whatever, you've got to get that fixed, because you can't afford to not have a good kicking game against Oklahoma, Texas A&M, Georgia, Missouri, and beyond. You are going to lose football games if you can't knock back some kicks.
Well, it's exactly what you saw last year. Regardless of how poor the offense played, more times than not, they were able to get to the 30-yard line. You just couldn't put the ball in the end zone. But if you could kick two field goals a game, you win two or three more football games. And whether that's just true outright score or whether that's just putting the game away to where you wouldn't have seen one of those comebacks from some of the other teams. But, yeah, it's a very tall task for Hugh Freeze to essentially walk up to Jackson Arnold, the offensive line and the receiver unit and the running backs, and basically go, all right, guys, I know we're at the 5-yard line right now. We got to get into the red zone for us to be able to kick a field goal.
Mm-hmm.
You got to go 75 yards just to try and get three. Because if you work your way to midfield, I mean, it used to get to the point where Auburn got to the 40-yard line. And it was like, okay, you're almost in field goal range. You pick up three or four more yards, and you love where you're at just simply from the standpoint of getting points. You're at the 30-yard line. All right, don't take a sack, and you have 3 points in your back pocket whenever you want it. Now you're at the point where if you don't see Alex McPherson run onto the field, you hold your breath for the entire play clock.
Yeah, no doubt. And so that's where I'm at right now on that. Good news in kicking, though, Hudson Cock has looked really good in the few punts that he has had to make this year. I think you've gotten everything out of him that you wanted. And in some of those SEC games, unfortunately, he's going to have to kick. I mean, Auburn's not going to score every time. But I think you've gotten good production out of him, and one that Auburn has been concerned with. And then punt returning has been
fine.
I mean, I know Malcolm's a little banged up, so he isn't back there. We saw a couple of other guys in there this past Saturday.
Malcolm was still the one there, the main one last year, or the main one last weekend.
I think Bryce got a punt return in this
he
past
did
weekend.
In the second half, but it was still Malcolm as your main returner. And I've just not understood. I know one of the times, I think he said it got lost in the lights, but the amount of times that you're seeing Auburn, whoever the name is, let the ball bounce 5 yards in front of them and either try and catch it off of that short hop or try and point directionally to get Auburn players out of the way, it feels like it's so much more stressful than just being where you need to be, running up 3 or 4 yards and making a grab, right? I mean, it takes so much stress off of your team to where Auburn's not at the point right now to where, or at least I'm not, and I think I speak for a majority of the fan base, I don't care what the punt return yards look like. I don't care if he has to catch it at the 8 yard line. Let the offense take over from there. I don't care that you instead get out to the 20 yard line. I hold my breath whenever the ball is in the air, just simply because it's either going to not get caught initially, it's going to be trying to be fielded off of a short hop right at the shins, which you saw from Malcolm last week. Luckily, he was able to fall on it. Or they completely let it go rather than running up and catching it. And rather than starting at the 30, you're starting at your own 14. Mm-hmm. Those make a very, very big difference. And if nothing gets cleaned up, you're going to see a ball once where Malcolm's trying to point it out of the way and you're getting blocks down the field where it shoots straight right. And Malcolm can't tell his guys to get out of the way, and instead of running up and catching the ball, whoever it is, it's going to hit an Auburn punt or Auburn blocker in the leg, and all of a sudden it's going to look like a 50-yard completion.
At the end of the day, man, just either catch it or get out of the way. One of the two. Just you and I've talked about.
Send 11.
Yeah. At what point do you just not even put somebody back there? Because the 20 yards you could get are not worth the turnover that you could give up. That's the way I look at it.
Which is wild on one of the on paper more simple plays in college football or football in general.
Yeah, just a simple way to get some yards back and just give your offense a better starting field position.
I just mean just by catching it.
Oh,
on paper, it's one of the easiest things to do is you have a ball coming at you. Don't worry about running. Just grab it.
Just grab it. Yeah, I don't know. So Auburn's got to get some of those things figured out in special teams. Offense appeared to move the football really well today. Defense got chewed out by Durkin, but I think they're going to be just fine.
And Champ Anthony was also reported. He did practice today. Did have that that club with the left hand, but he's out there on the field.
Yeah, put him out there. I mean, he's just as good. I mean, he's still a stud and somebody that Auburn needs back there.
Yeah.
Healthy, yes, but just his presence, his leadership out there in that secondary is a big deal for this Auburn defense as well. So let's take our final break here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. We'll come back and wrap it all up on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate you being along with us today. If you missed any of the show, you can go back and catch it with the podcast. We'll post the show for you on our station website at ESPNAU.com or just search On the Line wherever you get your podcast. We gave kind of our final thoughts on Auburn versus Ball State. Christian also talked with Lee Scott Academy's head football coach Buster Daniel as they get ready for week 4 of the high school season as they're undefeated, beating Childersburg last week. So appreciative of his time and his weekly visits with us here on the show. And then our kind of our takeaways, big takeaways for week 2 of college football. Are we ready to hit the panic button yet? Anybody on the hot seat? Maybe some more of that conversation tomorrow. Didn't quite get to that in particular. But then just some of the updates from Auburn football practice with injuries and competitions and different things like that. So been a jam-packed show, man. If you missed any of it, again, go and catch it with the podcast at ESPNAU.com. As we look ahead to what tomorrow holds. Tomorrow's Wednesday, so we'll have Jordan Hill of Dogs 2. 247. Get to talk to him about the Georgia-Tennessee game coming up this weekend. So really looking forward to that, because he should have some good things to say on what's going to happen this weekend between Georgia and Tennessee, that game in Knoxville.
Yeah, and then we get to talk with Daryl as well. From 315 to 345, get his final thoughts on Ball State as well. Talk about why or why not Alabama State is or isn't a big threat to the Auburn Tigers. Yeah, and then, yeah, get some of his thoughts on week three games, because that's where a bunch of these SEC teams are kicking off their SEC slate. So it's going to be a very, very fun show, as it always is on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
I'm telling you what, man. Tennessee is going to give Georgia everything they want this weekend. I can't wait to pick that game. Is there a spread out on that game yet?
I'm sure there is. Let me.
I haven't looked at it. I probably should have by now, but
I'm gonna guess without looking at it.
I haven't
Georgia
looked at it either.
Georgia by 3.5.
Yeah, I was gonna say Georgia. You know, I'll give Georgia 4.5 just for an ugly spread. I'll give Georgia 4.5, but I haven't looked at it yet either. It's a top 25 game.
On Monday, the spread moved to Georgia 3.5.
3.5. Okay. All right. So I wonder if that's gonna move.
And that
between
is it. Opened. It opened at 5.5 for Georgia.
Wow. Okay.
So it's dropped on every single book to 3.5.
Wow.
So everybody. There is not one that's anything other than 3.5.
So everybody has jumped on Tennessee. Getting them at 5.5 is pretty good. I can't lie about that, because my guess was 4.5. Yours was 3.5, which is where it sits right now. There's a really good chance by kickoff that's 2.5 or worse. I mean,
yeah.
It may not get lower than Georgia 2.5 unless it completely flips to Tennessee.
It'll go to 2.5, and then I think at game time it'll jump up to 3.5, because they'll take Georgia or they'll take Tennessee to cover at home by a field goal. That's what I think they would allow. 2.5, I don't know, that's too scary for everybody that bets Tennessee, because then all the books would, if Tennessee does find a way to cover that, 2.5, if not win outright. But, yeah, what a game that's set to be. I saw something, I don't remember the exact number of years, but it was that Tennessee in Neyland Stadium had lost only one home game, and I think it was the last 5 years, like a Power Four game. And so,
wow.
Should be a really fun game to watch.
I think Tennessee's a sneaky good team, man. I really do. And Georgia's going to have to figure it out for their first road game of the year. Not to mention they've got Alabama coming up next as well. I mean, that Georgia schedule's no joke, and it starts this weekend against Tennessee. So we get to talk to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 about that tomorrow. And then Daryl Dapper, it's Double D for Double D Wednesday. So that's on tomorrow's show, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.